Some say we need all the tools of industrial agriculture, including the GMOs and their attendant herbicides and pesticides, to feed our future. But others say, hey, wait a minute, and point to a study that says organic agriculture might be made to produce as much without the environmental costs. And so we pause to ask, can organic agriculture be as productive as industrial agriculture?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 996th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way up there in Quebec City who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Interesting to be here.
I have always is on this time of day. I have a question for you.
Okay.
Would you feel safe feeding your children cereal made from crops that have been sprayed with two kinds of herbicides and infused with three kinds of pesticides?
Do we even have a choice nowadays?
Yeah, we do. But would you feel safe?
I don't feel safe, and I think that we do feed them that whether we want to or not.
Okay. Well, folks, this just in, USDA has approved Monsanto Corporation's Xtend genetically modified soybeans for commercial production. Xtend demonstrates how some of the technologies of industrial agriculture address the problems of feeding ever more people with ever fewer resources. The problems Xtend address are the broadleaf weeds that steal sunshine, moisture, and nutrients from growing crops. Fighting weeds and other pests has always cost farmers a lot of resources. For millenniums, the fight employed a hoe and lots of farmers' time. Then, in 1970, Monsanto invented glyphosate, an herbicide that kills weeds on contact, and brought it to market under the trade name Roundup. Now, we've all heard of Roundup, right? More recently, Monsanto re-engineered the genes of some commercial crops to make them tolerate Roundup. These Roundup-ready crops make it possible for farmers to spread Roundup over broad areas of crops. Consequently, one farmer may now grow 1,000 acres of crops with no weeds. But weeds also have the ability to adapt, and they have adapted by becoming super weeds, able to withstand Roundup, which now takes us back to Monsanto's Xtend. Xtend crops have been re-engineered to tolerate both Roundup and dicamba, a version of 2,4-D, which is one of the constituents of the defoliant made famous in the 70s as Agent Orange. With Monsanto's Xtend, farmers will now be able to spray their weeds with two herbicides instead of one. Now, similar technologies have also been developed for insect pests, with some crops having been re-engineered to contain three varieties of pesticides in each of their cells. When an insect bites into a plant, it will consume three different pesticides, one of which will likely do that insect in. These technologies of industrial agriculture make it possible for few farmers to feed many people, but at the cost of an environment drenched in herbicides and infused with pesticides. Some say we need all the technologies of industrial agriculture to feed our future, that without them, millions will starve. But others point to a study that says organic agriculture might be made to produce as much without the environmental costs. And so we ask, can organic agriculture be as productive as industrial agriculture? And here to help us study up an answer, we have Lauren Panicio, who is a PhD candidate in conservation biology at UC Berkeley. Lauren, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Now, what on earth is a conservation biologist?
Well, I'm actually in the Department of Environmental Sciences, but a conservation biologist generally is interested in preserving biodiversity. So,
now, why did you become a a conservation biologist. I assume it was because you were interested in maintaining biological diversity, but why? Why bother?
So I grew up in the Central Valley of California, and in Fresno particularly. And one thing you'll notice is there isn't a lot of biodiversity in places like Fresno. And particularly, especially in agricultural areas, we rely a lot on that biodiversity for things like producing agriculture, for pollination services, for pest control services, and all these different things. And so I wanted to study something that would both, you know, improve human life, so the quality of life in human areas, but also be more friendly to the other creatures out there.
And recently you have become very famous for publishing a study in the Proceedings of the Royal Society of London. Now that sounds pretty darn prestigious to me. And there was a meta-study comparing the productivity of organic crops and what I call industrial crops. Now how did you come about deciding to conduct this study in the first place?
Well, it was in large part a response to another study that had been done a couple years ago. And we saw some ways that we can improve that study. So we went back and collected a lot more data and used more nuanced statistical techniques to try to answer this question.
So this really is a lot of number crunching that you did. This wasn't like planting two fields, one each side by side, and looking at the productivity. It was looking at how many studies did you look at?
We had over 100 studies and over 1,000 comparisons of organic and conventional agricultural yields.
Wow. So you had to come up with some kind of statistical way, an analysis of examining those statistics and coming up with some kind of useful information.
Exactly, because you can imagine it would be basically impossible to conduct a study where you could capture all the variability in weather and soil and, you know, different what's in different countries. So we basically used all the studies that were already out there comparing organic and conventional yields and synthesized them together.
And it sounds like there were a lot of them out there to look at.
There were quite a lot of them, yes. So we cover over 35 years, I think 58, how many countries? Quite a few countries and many different species of plants.
Well, Lauren, crops. What you came up with was kind of like a heresy of conventional or modern agriculture, in that you made an assertion that organic agriculture is nearly as productive as conventional or industrial agriculture. Now, what was the reaction to your study out there in the world?
We've mostly gotten very positive responses. Generally, the main result that I think really resonated with people is that there are a couple different practices that really reduce the yield gap between conventional and organic agriculture. And those are particularly polyculture planting. So that's when you're planting multiple crops in the same space to imitate the diversity of natural ecosystems. And crop rotations, which is when you're, you know, changing what crops are planted in an area between years or within a season. And we found that when those are in organic systems, it really improves productivity relative to conventional.
And it's kind of interesting because the tools of industrial or conventional agriculture are the tools that allow for monocultures, correct?
Exactly. Particularly when you have these really large-scale farms, you really need mechanization. And both of these different techniques, we haven't really worked out how to mechanize them very well.
And there we go. So if you buy a $300,000 tomato harvester, chances are not very good that you're going to be growing rutabagas.
Exactly. And we don't really have the technology or the research that's been put in to really how to, you know, work with these more diversified systems and also mechanize them.
So there really are two different ways of looking at the world, are they not? There's an organic way and there is an industrial or conventional. You know, talking about the terms here, folks, I was scolded roundly for using the term industrial versus organic. The commentator said it's kind of a false dynamic because there really isn't an industrial, because a lot of organic agriculture is industrial in its scope and nature. How would you respond to that, Lauren?
I would completely agree with that, particularly with a lot of your listeners down near Santa Cruz. I'm sure you've all driven around Salinas and seen huge monocultures of organic lettuce. So it's really, there really definitely is a spectrum, both for conventional and organic agriculture. On one side, you have the really high input agriculture where you have a lot of input of either organic or conventional pesticides and fertilizers. And on the other end of the spectrum, you're really trying to reduce those inputs and build the biological interactions like pollination and pest control and soil health. It will sustain production without so many inputs.
Good. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to ask Lauren Panicio, who is a conservation biologist, what is the essential difference between these two kinds of agriculture that we're looking at today? The question on the table, can organic agriculture be as productive as conventional or industrial agriculture? Do stay tuned, right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5, 6, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Some say we need all the tools of modern agriculture to feed our future. And those tools include genetically modified crops, crops that are designed to withstand herbicides and to be infused with pesticides. We need everything, they say, to feed the future. But others say, hey, wait a minute. Look at this study. This study says that organic agriculture, without all of those modern tools, can be almost as productive as conventional agriculture. So that's the question we have on the table today. Can we grow food that we need to feed our future without all of those modern tools? And we have Lauren Panicio, who is a PhD candidate in conservation biology at UC Berkeley, here to help us look up the reasons behind this logic here. First, Lauren, I thought what we might do to help clear the air a little bit is kind of go through a quick thumbnail on what the essential differences are between the way conventional or modern agriculture approaches the production of food and the way organic agriculture does. So maybe we could just start with how the both of these agricultures feed their crops. Want to pick that one up?
Sure. Well, so on one end of the spectrum, you have, let's say, conventional agriculture, and then you can use inorganic fertilizers, particularly nitrogen, phosphorus, a lot of mined materials, and in organic systems, you can still use fertilizers, but they have to be organic in origin. So people use,
which would be manure, biological in nature then, right?
Exactly. So, you know, animal manure is also composting of plant material, as well as a variety of different types of organic fertilizers.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about the terms organic and industrial or whatever, and I got to thinking about conventional, and conventional has come to represent that ultra-modern technology of the last few decades, where really conventional agriculture is probably the agriculture of the millenniums, which would be the other agriculture. But I guess that would be quibbling, would it not?
I've always found the terminology rather ironic because, yes, conventional usually means common or like it's been around for a while, but really most of these practices we've only been using since the Industrial Revolution and
World War II.
The last hundreds of years, so it's not actually very conventional.
Yeah, so it's kind of like modern or something ultra-modern. What's the difference in the way both manage the weed pests?
So in conventional systems, most of the time you're applying herbicides. In organic systems, a lot of the time you are trying to plant and cultivate in a way that minimizes weed competition, but you're also doing a lot more labor-intensive hand pulling of weeds.
Okay. I hear time in there, right?
Yeah, so a lot of the criticisms of organic, or I'm gonna go ahead and say more diversified systems. Like even, you know, say they also use inorganic fertilizers or pesticides, but let's say, you know, systems that use more crop rotations or polyculture, is they tend to be more labor intensive.
Mm-hmm. More time. There it is. And what about pests? You know, we hear that the USDA has approved Monsanto's Xtend crops, which allow farmers to spray two kinds of herbicides and infuse the crops with three kinds of pesticides. That's a pretty attractive way for a farmer to grow a crop, because, you know, one farmer can grow 1,000 acres of crops with no weeds and no bugs. And therefore, he can get a lot more crops out of the ground. But gee whiz, what does that leave consumers?
Yeah, so exactly. So, you know, with a lot of this, a lot of times pesticides are applied and also infused in the seeds. So you don't really have a choice of when you apply it. Whether or not there are pests, you're applying a lot of pesticides. Where we work in, we work in Yolo County in the Central Valley, mm-hmm. and some crops are sprayed, it's an incredible amount, maybe 30 times.
30 times?
Yeah, in the growing season. And so when you're talking about more diversified systems, the goal is to reduce your reliance on these pesticides by basically planting in a way that promotes natural pest control. So there's lots of, you know, little wasps and things out there that are killing these pests naturally. And so the goal is to plant in a way and promote these services without needing so much pesticides.
You know, in F.H. King's monumental book, Farmers of 40 Centuries, he talked about how he witnessed a Chinese farmer going through this on a small parcel of land. And he remarked that, gosh, you know, this is really smart farming. This guy's a smart guy. And I got to thinking, you know, organic farming requires a lot of smarts, because you don't have the artillery that you do with the unrestricted use of technology that you do in the modern agriculture.
I would say both conventional and organic agriculture, they need a lot of attention by the farmer, and, you know, what their crops need, what, you know, is there not enough water, should we add some more water, is, you know, pest control and things like that. But in general, yes, it does seem like to truly understand the system, to understand, you know, how to promote pest control services, how to, you know, grow in a way that you have more pollinators, you need a lot more information about your system and things like that.
Because your system's ultimately more complex. If you have one crop in the field, if you have a 1,000 acres of soybeans in the field, I mean, it's relatively one-dimensional, as it were, but if you're using that field to grow a number of different crops, each crop compounds the complexity.
Yes, yes.
Wow. So how did you start your study? This is a meta-study, again. This is a study of a broad number of information sources. So first question I want to ask is, why couldn't you just plant two fields side by side and measure the difference?
So, I mean, a lot of people have done that, but if you just had this one study, you know, where would you put it? Like, would it be in the Salinas Valley? Would it be in Yolo County? You know, there's so much variability in soil, in weather, in all these different production systems. You want to capture that variability when you're trying to get a global estimate of the difference between organic and conventional agriculture.
So there's so much variability, you can't really do side-by-side comparisons and get a fair estimation of the difference in.
Well, you can do a side-by-side comparison, but that comparison would probably be very specific to, you know, the crop you're planting, the region you're planting in, and even the year, because of climate variability and things like that.
How do you go about doing a meta study? You have to lay out all of this information side-by-side. How do you crunch the numbers?
So the first thing we did was we did an extensive literature search. So we just, you know, typed organic and conventional comparison yield, you know, into a search engine and just looked through thousands upon thousands of studies that use those words. And we've, narrowed it down to the studies that actually reported a yield of a conventional crop and the same organic crop. So they were making an explicit comparison between conventional and organic agriculture.
So apples and apples, as it were.
Exactly.
Good. And so you have these two, then you had to do something with the numbers, right?
Yes, yes. Then we bring them all together and we use different statistical models to take into account, you know, the variability in these studies and model it properly so that we can get an estimate.
Now, how do you go about modeling something properly?
I'm really trying to avoid getting really statistical.
I know, but I, you know, we're all scratching our head. What you've done really is a profound statement when you come out and say that that conventional agriculture and organic agriculture are approximately equal. That's it. I haven't heard that really put on the line. That's a profound statement.
We do find a difference. We do find a difference between organic and conventional agriculture, about 19%. So there is. But it's particularly when we're pointing to those diversification practices, when we look at polycultures and crop rotations in organic systems where there are none in conventional, that we see the yield gap is only around 8 or 9% with some variability. So it gets really close to having no difference.
So the key then, really, is where organic agriculture is done properly, that is where you see the approximate equal productivity.
Exactly. So when it's done with certain practices, that's when we see the
fair enough. Yeah. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Question on the table, can organic agriculture be made to be as productive as conventional agriculture? Wouldn't that be something if we could grow all the food we needed without all of those toxic elements that we use? There might be some hope there. That's what we have on the table today with Lauren Panizio and you right back. Do stay tuned. Well, some say we need all the tools of conventional or modern agriculture to feed our future. Those tools include the genetically modified crops, like the new dicamba, just approved by the USDA. Lauren Panizio, I have a quick question. Has the USDA ever disapproved anything that Monsanto requested?
I'm not sure about the answer to that question.
I'm not either, but maybe somebody out there knows the answer to that question. Has the United States Department of Agriculture ever turned down any requests made by the Monsanto Corporation? Phone numbers, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Love to know about it. But the question is, do we need all of those things to feed our future? Will we starve to death without them? Well, a study presented, made possible by Lauren Panizio and her fellow students up at UC Berkeley, kind of points in the other direction. Maybe we don't. And so we're going to look at that study today and see what you did learn by studying what, how many, 100 different studies, 1,000 different inputs, a lot of information there you put together.
Yes, over 1,000 comparisons, over 38 countries, and 52 different species of crops over a span of 35 years. So those are all the different studies we brought together to come up with an estimate of the difference between organic and conventional agricultural production.
And what exactly was your estimate?
So it was about 19%.
Okay, so organic agriculture is 19% less productive than modern agriculture, but what?
But when you use certain practices like crop rotation and polycultures, more diversification practices that are meant to mimic natural ecosystems, the yield gap shrinks to about 8 or 9%.
Now, some years ago, a friend of mine who's a strawberry grower here on the California Central Coast, I was visiting him at one of his ranches, and he said, yeah, I have an organic patch of strawberries here. Look at them. They're totally worthless. And I looked at them, and it appeared as though what he did was just took a conventional field out of rotation and planted strawberries in it and watched to see what happened. But there was really no organic practices involved other than not using pesticides or herbicides or whatever they use. So what you're saying is that if done correctly, then the difference between organic and conventional is much narrower.
Exactly. So a lot of organic, you know, agriculture can often be exactly the same as conventional, except instead of using conventional fertilizers, conventional pesticides, you're using their organic counterparts. So there's a ton of inputs into the system. But if you're using practices that are meant to diversify the landscape, so meant to build biological interactions and the services provided by, you know, natural pest control, pollinators, then you're getting higher yields.
So in essence, if you're using industrial methods to grow organic food, you're going to come up with maybe about 19% less. But if you use biological systems that have been traditionally used throughout the millenniums to grow crops, then the difference is not quite so much. Maybe, what did you say, 9%?
8 or 9%, yeah.
8 or 9%, so significantly less. And so we've narrowed the scope of that hugely.
To put the difference in yield into context, this, so we throw away about 30 to 40% of agricultural production in developed countries. So a yield gap of 19% even is very small if we reduce food waste. And a yield gap of 8 or 9% is very feasible to eliminate.
Wow.
Particularly talking about the USDA and, you know, whether they've ever said no to Monsanto. So in their research and development funds, there's only about 1 to 2% dedicated to refining organic agricultural techniques. Compared to the amount of money and time and research we've spent, you know, refining conventional agriculture, we haven't really done that with organic techniques. So there's this really open area where we could put a lot of investment into, you know, refining these types of practices like crop rotation and multi-cropping and polyculture, and potentially reduce the yield gap even further.
Well, you know, that's very interesting too. Why does not the federal government put money into researching biologically intensive systems for agriculture? But then, you know, you look at the money in agriculture, and the money is in those things that can be patented and controlled, like genetically modified crops, for example, like Monsanto's new Xtend. That's a crop that can be patented and controlled and licensed. And if you break that license, you could be subject to who knows what. Similarly, you know, the chemicals that are applied can be patented for a length of time. So it makes sense for companies, at least, to research those things that they can own and control. But it doesn't make sense for companies to research and develop things they can't control, like biological systems. Your comment?
That is very true, and interestingly, actually, a lot of pesticide companies are also now moving into patenting natural pest controllers. So they're actually, you know, looking at biocontrol and things like that, so they can find some, you know, natural quote unquote way to manage pests and also patent it.
So what you're saying is that, for example, they develop a strain of Bacillus thuringiensis, they can control that bacillus and prevent other people from using it. Wow, really? They
yeah.
can own life like that?
It, yes, I mean, if you can own seeds, that's owning life as well.
Yeah. So then the effort then is going into those kinds of biological controls that can be managed and owned and patented then.
Yes, there is. But the more question is, I mean, companies, of course, yes, that's the direction. But there still is, you know, money from the USDA that isn't meant to have a profit associated with it. So we could use that type of funding to develop more sustainable practices.
Mm-hmm. But if you look at the USDA and the FDA, you see that it is well-stocked, as it were, by representatives from industry. And when they decide how to invest their funds, I suspect that that industry has an influence there, whereas, you know, an organic farmer in Davis, California might not have much of an influence.
And that might be the reason that only 1 to 2% of the research budget is dedicated to organic farming.
There you go. Well, we're well on the way into this study that says it might not be so that organic agriculture is less productive. What we started with was a 19% difference. But we look at, when we look at those organic farms that use biological systems, the difference is only 9%. And that's not very much when you think about it. Then when we get back, we're going to talk about some of the costs associated with both ways. And I wonder about the costs supplying sufficient nutrients to organic systems when conventional systems can use nutrients manufactured from natural gas. What do you think out there? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, it seems to me that agriculture became modern when it figured out how to substitute the input of time, farmers' time in the field, for the input of money. Money always being less expensive than a farmer's time. At least that's the case here in the United States. Maybe not so much other places like China, for example. And so we figured out how to replace time with money. And we take our money out and we buy, for example, nitrogen fertilizer made from natural gas. Now, to replace that synthetic nitrogen fertilizer with organic fertilizer, that take a lot of time, would it not, Lauren?
So, in the application or in the production of the fertilizer?
In the production.
So most of organic fertilizers that are used are recycled products. So you can have animal manure or even from on-farm composting. Interestingly, about 650 pounds of organic waste per person in California are thrown away, and that can all be turned into compost that can be used on organic farms.
But does that not take time? And I think this is one of the principal arguments against organic agriculture. Hey, it takes a lot of work to make that organic fertilizer when I can just buy the stuff in a bag.
Well, you can buy compost in a bag too. I think that, you know, the process that makes inorganic fertilizers is also pretty, it's an industrial process that is time consuming. It needs workers who are, you know, managing these different plants. It's more, I think with the labor question, it's more about, you know, the time of applying this fertilizer and also, you know, the more physically pulling weeds instead of using herbicides.
Mm-hmm. And those are time.
I think that's where the labor issue comes in, is more in the kind of on-the-ground application versus the actual production of the fertilizer.
Okay. What about space, then, to produce the organic nitrogen? Doesn't it take a lot of space? Doesn't that space cost in terms of lost productivity?
So if you think of a lot of the organic fertilizers as waste products, so, you know, animal manure or, you know, compost from people's yards and people's food scraps, then that space is already dedicated to doing what it's already doing. So it's not needing any additional space.
Okay. And then one of the more interesting things you came up with respect to this study was an apparent issue of bias in reporting.
Yes. So we found, what you're hoping is you're collecting all these studies from around the world and trying to synthesize them. And you really hope that what's happening on the ground is being translated into studies. And then you can bring them all together and get a really good global estimate of the, you know, organic and conventional productivity. Mm-hmm. And we found that wasn't likely the case. So there seemed to be sort of an issue where a lot of the studies were reporting higher conventional yields in organic than would be expected if you were kind of getting like 50, a more even distribution. And that can be due to a lot of different reasons that are really difficult to nail down. One particularly that we think might be going on is an actual study selection bias. So it's not a bias. It's not as though, you know,
a study selection bias.
So what studies are being, people conduct studies for a lot of different reasons. It could be what funding's out there. It could be what's interesting to them. It could be they want to find a really big difference between organic and conventional agriculture so they can publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And we particularly found a lot of studies on cereals. So that's, you know, different grains, wheat, barley, maize. And they are a group of crops that have the largest difference between conventional and organic agriculture. So if you looked at, like, the, you know, what is growing in the
And those, world, incidentally, are the crops that tend to be genetically modified and have a lot of corporate money behind them as well, then, right?
Exactly. So it's the crops we put the most money and time into really refining in organic and in conventional systems. So we breed seeds that do well in conventional systems. We, you know, they're really used to having a lot of inputs. They're used to being doused with pesticides. They're, you know, bred to have a lot of fertilizer for them. So it's not surprising at all that cereals would do so much better in conventional systems. But what you hope in your study is that you're getting, you know, the crops that are being planted are accurately reflecting in the studies that are being conducted. So you want sort of equal proportions. And what we saw is there's many more studies on cereals than what would be expected if you were actually just, you know, doing a study on the different crops that are being planted in the world.
And if your company has a significant investment amount of money invested in these particular cereal crops, then you might tend to look for a certain outcome in the studies, right? It's kind of like
it might also just be there's more money to do, you know, research on cereals, and because we've spent so much time really getting the yields in cereals to be very high in conventional systems, we just see a lot of those studies in the data set.
Okay, so work can work both ways then. And then the if you take that apparent bias into effect, then what does it do to the yield gap then? We're down to 8%, for example.
So it's very difficult to correct for that bias. You mostly just have to say, well, it's there. So that 19% estimate is probably an overestimate. So we have to sort of take it with a grain of salt.
So in political polls, they always do plus or minus 2%, right? And so you're saying, well, there might be a minus factor here that we should consider. Then, folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Going to have a few minutes left with Lauren Panicio, who is a conservation biologist at UC Berkeley. Did a meta study, took a whole bunch of studies and laid them on the table and pulled all the information out and put it into the magic formulas that they come up with at the University of California, Berkeley. And they came up with the fact that conventional agriculture is not all that much more productive than organic. And can we live without all of those modern tools? Right back for the conclusion.
Frank Muller has been farming in woodland with his brothers Louie and Tom for as long as they can remember.
We've been farming since we were kids, but the college years at UC Davis were the big years. Because what we learned there, we brought home. Today we're still working to make farming more productive and friendlier for the environment. Yeah, the future of agriculture looks good.
Find out how UC Davis partners with growers like the Mullers at onecalifornia.ucdavis.edu.
Well, USDA just granted Monsanto Corporation the right to use Xtend crops throughout commercial production in soybeans. That means that farmers can now spray their crops with two kinds of herbicides. One is glyphosate, which is commonly known as Roundup, and the other is dicamba, which is a form of 2,4-D. And 2,4-D, incidentally, was used in combination with other herbicides in the Vietnam War to defoliate Vietnam, and thus became very famous as Agent Orange. And so kind of what we're doing now, mixing dicamba and glyphosate to kill weeds that have developed the ability to withstand glyphosate. So we have this technology, and we're pursuing it, and they say we need it to produce food for our future. Otherwise, millions and billions and trillions will starve to death. But is that the case? Lauren Panicio and associates at UC Berkeley looked at the production studies that have been done over the past couple decades or so and learned that conventional culture, or those cultures that use, are free to use all the tools of modern technology, are not all that much more productive, in spite of all of the biases that that are apparent in the studies, and in spite of the fact that very few federal studies have looked at how to make organic agriculture more productive. Is that a fair summation, Lauren?
Yes, that's fair. Thank you, Michael.
So what does this tell us then? What is that? I mean, that to me, this is pretty profound stuff.
Well, I think it is important to realize that agricultural yields in and of themselves are actually not enough to feed the world. So we need to think about global food supplies and the social and political and economic factors that prevent many people from having access to food. So there's plenty of food for everyone to be fed currently, but still many people go hungry. And there's also issues with food waste. We throw away 30 to 40% of the food we produce in developing countries. In addition, a lot of the yields are going to feeding animals, non-human animals. So for meat production, particularly the ones you're mentioning, soybean production and corn production, mm-hmm. that use a lot of the pesticides and herbicides.
Which sounds great if you like meat like I do. Thank you. So do we need them? Can we make it without them, with all of those tools of chemical warfare that we use on agriculture? Can we survive without them?
I think it would be more fair to say that we need to be more cautious in their application and use them only when necessary.
And there it is. Folks, this has been the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Lauren Panicio, a conservation biologist from UC Berkeley. Lauren, how do people tune in with your study?
But most have been very supportive. We've had a lot of really positive feedback.
How can people find it?
Oh, how can people find it?
Yes, exactly.
So the actual study is available on the journal website, so the Proceedings of the Royal Society of London. It is also, you can search for it, and it's available online. There's also some popular science pieces written by various people and blogs that are widely available. If you just search comparing organic and conventional farming and maybe my last name.
Panicio, Lauren the Troublemaker, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for looking into this subject for us. Really appreciate it. Folks, it's been The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.